So we've now taken our closer look at the encounters of some of the disciples and bodhisattvas with Vimalakirti. And the main point should now be quite clear. The Hinayana is a means to an end. The Mahayana is a means to an end. Buddhism is a means to an end. Religion is a means to an end. And that end is the development of the individual, the spiritual development of the individual. None of these things is an end in itself. So what helps us to remember this, that all these things, that religion in particular, is an end in itself? What helps us to remember this is what I've called the transcendental critique of religion. And it's this that we find in the Vimalakirti Nirdesha, especially in the two chapters with which we've been concerned tonight. Now, Buddhism has always had this sort of critique. In fact, it's a part of Buddhism. Buddhism has always been aware that it's only a means to an end. In fact, it's always announced itself as such. You may recollect the Buddha's parable of the raft. The Buddha said, "I teach you the Dharma under the figure of a raft as something to leave behind you, not to take with you." And this sort of emphasis is particularly strong in the Mahayana. It's strongest of all, perhaps, in Zen. You may remember those Chinese and Japanese pictures of the sixth patriarch tearing up the Diamond Sutra. Or you may remember the story of the traveling monk who, on a cold night, chopped up the wooden Buddha images in the temple at which he was staying for fuel because he felt cold. Or you may recollect the master saying to the disciple, "If you meet the Buddha, kill him. It's only a means to an end." These are all rather extreme, perhaps even rather bizarre, ways or means of underlining the same message that Buddhism is only a means to an end. And it's because Buddhism has always been aware that it was only a means to an end that it has remained down the centuries spiritually so alive. The means has been able to function as a means. If a means becomes an end in itself, it cannot function as a means. For the same reason, Buddhism has not, on the whole, been dogmatic or intolerant. It has never persecuted the followers of other religions, and the followers of one form of Buddhism have not persecuted the followers of other forms of Buddhism. At the beginning of this talk, I said that what helped us as individuals to become free was religion, as we may call it. And I further said that if we were to ask the followers of other religions where they stood, where those religions stood in this respect, they will probably say that they too, that the other religions too, helped the individual to become free, that they too were a means to the end, a means to an end. But this, I may say, is not quite fair to Buddhism. Other religions, it must be frankly said, are not really on a par with Buddhism in this respect. They don't always really help the individual to become free. They don't really always see themselves as means to an end in the way that Buddhism does, especially the theistic religions, that is to say, those religions that believe in God. Other religions don't have any critique of religion, whether transcendental or otherwise. They don't have any self-critique, don't have any critique of themselves. And it's therefore necessary that we apply the Buddhist critique to them. It's necessary that we get Vimalakirti to come along. And when we do this, only too often we find that they, the other religions are not, in fact, means to the development of the individual at all. In other words, the critique turns into a criticism. Some people think one should not criticize other religions, should not in fact criticize religions, and should not criticize Christianity in particular. But criticism is essential. It's only by criticism that one can eliminate what is not in fact a means to one's development as an individual, or what is even an obstacle to one's development as an individual. It's only by means of critique that we can ensure that the means to the development of the individual remains a means and doesn't harden into an end in itself. So we should apply this critique, even this criticism, to everything that presents itself to us as religion. Should apply it to Christianity, should apply it to Buddhism, apply it to the Hinayana, apply it to the Mahayana, apply it to the Vajrayana, should apply it to our own practice of the Dharma. If we practice meditation, we should ask ourselves, is it really helping me to develop? Or if we take part in communication exercises, we should ask ourselves, is it really helping us to develop? If we study books on Buddhism or attend lectures on Buddhism, is it really helping us to develop? Similarly, if we live in a community or work in a co-op, is it really helping us to develop? We should never allow any of these things to become ends in themselves. Should always remember that they are means to an end. If we can do this, then we will ourselves be living embodiments of the reality of religion, and at the same time living embodiments of the transcendental critique of religion. And if we do this, religion will help us to become free rather than help us to become more enslaved. And we shall have perhaps at least a foretaste of the inconceivable liberation.